Matthew chapter number 16. We are continuing our series through the Gospel of Matthew. This is message number 39 in that series. This message is entitled Sadducees and Pharisees. We're going to be looking at chapter 16 and verses 1 to 12. And to get started, I'm going to read verses 1 to 4. The Pharisees also with the Sadducees came and tempting desired him that he would show them a sign from heaven. He answered and said unto them, When it is evening, ye say it will be fair weather, for the sky is red. And in the morning it will be foul weather today, for the sky is red and lowering. O ye hypocrites, you can discern the face of the sky, but can you not discern the signs of the times? A wicked and adulterous generation seeketh after a sign, and there shall no sign be given unto it but the sign of the prophet Jonah. And he left them and departed. So chapter 15 opened with this conflict between Jesus and scribes and Pharisees from Jerusalem. And after that, Jesus left the Jewish regions of Galilee and actually went into the Gentile territories in Galilee and even beyond. And in Matthew there in chapter 15 gives us three miracle episodes that all involve the Gentiles, even though Jesus told the Canaanite woman that he was only sent to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And these episodes, these miracles among the Gentiles in chapter 15 culminates in the feeding of the 4,000. Now, we already looked previously at the feeding of the 5,000, and there are a lot of similarities between these two mass feedings of the multitudes. But the primary difference, of course, was here in chapter 15 that Jesus fed the 4,000 plus. This was a Gentile crowd and not a Jewish crowd. And so Matthew recounts this Gentiles miracle series between two opposition and rejection stories. One at the beginning of chapter 15, and the next one is here at the beginning of chapter 16 that we're looking at this morning. These rejection and opposition stories are obviously foreshadowing the rejection and the judgment that is coming on that generation of Israel, as well as the Gentile episodes foreshadowing the spreading of the gospel to the nations in this intervening age between the first and second coming of Jesus Christ. Also, we might call it the age of the nations, taken from the book of Daniel. Well, chapter 16 opens up with this confrontation between the Pharisees and the Sadducees and Jesus. Jesus has crossed back over into the Jewish territories of Galilee, and it seems like immediately he is met by these leaders, and this confrontation ensues. Now, the Sadducees have not been mentioned in Matthew's gospel since chapter 3 and verse number 7, and their inclusion here is certainly quite interesting. Now, this group of Pharisees and Sadducees that come to Jesus, they want to see a miracle, but not just any miracle. They want to see a signifying miracle. They want to see a miracle as proof that he is from God. But instead, they receive an answer that seemed to silence them, at least for a time. And then the rest of the account is the interaction between Jesus and his apostles that is prompted by this confrontation. And that ends up somewhat surprisingly with the apostles understanding what Jesus was speaking about. So we're going to look at this in two parts. In verses 1 to 4 is where the Pharisees and the Sadducees come seeking a sign. And in verses 5 to 12, where Jesus gives a private warning to his disciples to beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. So we'll begin here with the first part and the seeking of a sign. Verse 1, the Pharisees also with the Sadducees came and tempting desired him that he would show them a sign from heaven. Now, from the end of chapter 15 We know that Jesus had left the region of Decapolis. This was a Gentile region of different cities. And he had crossed the lake, the Sea of Galilee, and he had gone back to the northwest shore of the Sea of Galilee. And so he's back in Jewish territory in Galilee. And we read here how that he was met by a group of Pharisees and Sadducees. And again, the Sadducees have not been mentioned by name since chapter 3 and verse number 7. And when you look at chapter 3 and verse number 7, and we were talking about that some in Sunday school earlier, but when you look at that verse, you realize that they're mentioned there also with the Pharisees, and they together had gone out to see John the Baptist. So the mention of the Sadducees here along with the Pharisees gives this a more official significance of the rejection of Jesus. The Sadducees were those that controlled the priesthood. They controlled the Sanhedrin. They were essentially the rulers of Israel in that day. They had the most political power in Israel. The Pharisees, of course, controlled the synagogues, and they could have just been local Pharisees from the synagogues of Galilee, and you know how that is. That would not be as prestigious as being a rabbi in a prestigious synagogue in Jerusalem, for instance. And so, you know, Pharisees were on different levels of importance, you might say. But generally speaking, when the Sadducees came out, we really have representation here of the leaders of Israel with the Pharisees and the Sadducees together to confront Jesus. And the fact that they are together, even though they were bitter opponents for a couple of centuries at least by this time, the fact that they are here together and they're obviously working together shows their collusion, their common purpose that they had in destroying Jesus. As we looked at in Sunday school a little bit, neither one of these groups thought that Jesus of Nazareth was the Messiah of promise from the Old Testament, but he was a problem for both of these groups for different reasons, and they both wanted rid of him. Now, Matthew states very clearly, they came to test Jesus. I think it says tempt or test Jesus. So they were conspiring together. And they were, at this point, trying to find ways to entrap Jesus. Not just to discredit him. You know, if you maybe you're at a birthday party or something and somebody hires a bad magician, you know, is not very good at pulling off his tricks, and somebody starts saying, oh, look, he's hiding that behind the thing, and you know, basically their whole point there is just to discredit him. This guy's a bum. Get him out of here. They weren't trying to just discredit Jesus. They're looking for charges against Jesus. They need formal accusations that they can bring against him, because obviously getting rid of him is going to involve the Roman Empire. And if they're going to do that, it can't just be a dispute among them about theology or doctrines or teachings of the Torah or something of that nature. They're going to have something worthy of the death penalty to bring against Jesus. And so they are actually working together, actually conspiring, trying to come up with such. And they come here and they ask for this sign. Now, this is much like the earlier encounter we saw with scribes and Pharisees in chapter 12 and verses 38 to 42. They ask for a sign from heaven. Now, they are very well aware of many signs and wonders that Jesus had performed by this point. He has healed the sick, healed the lame, healed the blind, healed the deaf. He's cast out demons. He's raised the dead. He's walked on water. I mean, he's turned the water into wine. He's done all kinds of miracles that, again, if you look at any other prophet in the Old Testament and miracles that they may be performed, the scale at which Jesus worked these miracles, the magnitude of them, the quantity of them, completely unprecedented. It's like nothing that has ever been seen. And sometimes the crowd's even reacting that way. This has never been seen. This has never been heard in Israel. So the Pharisees and the Sadducees both are very well aware of many of the signs and miracles that Jesus has performed. But they're asking here for something specific. They're not asking for just any miracle, just any healing of the blind that none of them could do. They're asking for a signifying miracle, a sign from heaven. What they're asking for is an apocalyptic sign. Signs such as those that were prophesied to accompany the coming of the Messiah and the day of the Lord. The moon being turned into blood and all those sort of things that we read about in those apocalyptic signs. That's what they're asking for. And such a request also shows that they knew very well the claims concerning Jesus, that he was the Son of David, that he was the Messiah. And their request also shows that they had consciously rejected such claims. Neither of these groups, they did not believe Jesus of Nazareth to be the Messiah. They did not believe that. And so they are asking this to essentially disprove his messiahship rather than to prove it, which is usually the case with those requiring proof and such. Verse number 2. He answered and said unto them, "When it is evening, ye say it will be fair weather, for the sky is red." So Jesus responds to them, and he responds with a sort of a brief type of parable type statement. But it's pretty straightforward. It's pretty understandable. He essentially says that they can observe the sky and make a rough prediction of coming weather. And we can all do the same. We don't need an app to look out and to see this morning it's very dark, it's very overcast, it's very gloomy, probably going to rain. And that's a pretty good assumption. Sometimes it blows over without raining in your specific spot. But it's a pretty good assumption to make. And so that's what Jesus is talking about here. And he continues in verse 3. "And in the morning, it will be foul weather today, for the sky is red and lowering. O ye hypocrites, ye can discern the face of the sky, but you cannot discern the signs of the times." So even though Jesus spoke to them in sort of a parable-like form, the meaning of it is very clear. As he rebukes those asking him this question, first of all, he calls them hypocrites. Now that word described primarily an actor on a stage who was playing a character. So in other words, they were pretending to be something that they weren't. And Jesus is using this charge, and that is precisely how they came to Jesus. They came asking for this sign, but they were concealing their true motives, that they are conspiring together how to destroy him. And so what Jesus says to them is, you can read the signs of impending weather, but you cannot discern the signs of the times. Now, this word for times that he uses here, essentially you have chronos, which would be just sort of the chronological passing of time, moment by moment, second by second, and such. And then you have kairos, and kairos doesn't really refer to a particular hour or minute or the measure of time that way. Kairos refers more to a time period or to a season. And that's the word that he uses here, the signs of the time. In other words, he's saying you can't discern the signs of the season that you are currently in. Now, both of these groups, the Sadducees and the Pharisees, though they had a lot of disagreements and division between them, both of these groups essentially made their living from the Old Testament, from studying it. It was more or less their daily jobs, and they could not see the signs. And the fact that they could not was not because of a lack of acquaintance with the Old Testament or knowledge of what the Old Testament had to say, but it was because of blindness and because of deafness, just as had been prophesied. So think about what some of these signs are that Jesus is referring to, the signs of that season. What were some of those signs? Well,
One of those obviously was the arrival of John the Baptist. I mean, it was made very plain that and John even said this of himself, Jesus said it of him as well, that he is the forerunner that was prophesied to come before the Lord, to come before his face and to prepare his way. Then you also have the arrival of Jesus. And John was one that spoke of the arrival of Jesus and introduced him as the Lamb of God that takes away the sins of the world. And then you have all of these works, these wonders and signs, the things that Jesus taught and the fulfillment of all of these Old Testament scriptures. And in addition to that, if you go back to the book of Daniel and you do the math to work from the decree to return to Jerusalem, you are somewhere at that 69th week that Daniel prophesied about. So all of these things to those that studied and knew the Old Testament and essentially made their living from it should have been well known and well discernible by them. And they come to Jesus asking for him to show a sign. Give us proof that you are the Messiah. And he says, you can look out and tell the weather, but you cannot even understand the signs of the times that you're living in. Verse 4, a wicked and adulterous generation seeketh after a sign, and there shall no sign be given unto it, but the sign of the prophet Jonah. And he left them and departed. So he continued to rebuke them as a wicked and an adulterous generation. Again, making that comparison to that rebellious and unbelieving generation that came out of Egypt. And he assured them no sign would be given to them. No such sign would be given to them. The only sign that would be given to them is the sign of Jonah. And that sign is the sign of resurrection. And we've already looked at that in Matthew chapter 12, verse 38 to 42. So Jesus here repeats that. And as you proceed, as you read on from here in Matthew's gospel, you're going to notice that there's a decrease in emphasis on miracles as you go forward. He says, no sign will be given you. And even as you proceed, there's going to be an increased emphasis on Jesus instructing his apostles, speaking about his upcoming death and such. And there's going to be a decrease in emphasis on miracles as you move forward in Matthew's gospel. And later, think about Peter as he preached on the day of Pentecost, and he's in Jerusalem, and he's addressing all of these crowds of Jews from different nations. And he proclaimed this very sign of Jonah, the death and resurrection of Jesus. And in Acts chapter 2 and verse number 40, he tells them, you need to save yourselves from this evil generation. He exhorted them to be delivered through repentance of their rejection of Jesus Christ, put their faith and trust in him who is both Lord and Christ. And then we read that Jesus left this confrontation. As I understand it, the language used here is just a little stronger than what it was previously. Previously, he sort of withdrew, and this is more of the idea that he forsook, he abandoned, he left. Again, just a little bit stronger. Then we get to the next part where Jesus gives a direct warning to his apostles that's a result of this confrontation, beginning with verse 5. And when his disciples were come to the other side, they had forgotten to take bread. So the other side refers to the other side of the Sea of Galilee. This would have been, they were up on the northwestern shore of the Sea of Galilee. He left and departed. They went to the other side, meaning they would have went to the northeastern shore of the Sea of Galilee. They went from the region of Magdala, as it is mentioned in the end of chapter 15, to the region of Bethsaida. And I believe that Mark mentions that in particular. So Matthew is preparing us here, though, for this exchange between Jesus and his apostles by noting that they had forgotten to bring bread with them in the boat. Verse number 6. Then Jesus said unto them, take heed and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and of the Sadducees. So they've just left this confrontation, and Jesus gives this emphatic charge to the 12. He warned them. He warned them to take heed and beware. Literally, he told them to stare at and hold in their minds the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. Again, that's just the meaning of the terms that he used. Look carefully. Pay attention to. Beware. Hold this in your mind. Give attention to and to be careful of. Now, he referred to the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And leaven refers to that little lump of fermented dough that was kept to be added to fresh dough in order to leaven the fresh dough and to cause it to rise. Now, the point is not that leaven is bad, and sometimes it's presented that way. Oh, leaven is always bad. It's not that leaven is bad. It's a good reference to use, leaven is, because it's the way that leaven works. That's the point of the comparison. And sometimes it's used in a negative way. Sometimes it's used in a positive way. So just a small lump that is added to a much larger lump of dough, and you think about that small little piece and how that could just be such a small percentage of this large piece that you've got here. But you take that small little piece and you put it in that dough and you work it, and it's going to work and it's going to spread until that entire large piece is leavened. And once it's been added in, it can't be taken out. And so this is the point of using leaven as an illustration. And again, sometimes it is negative and sometimes it is positive. It just depends on the context. In this case, it's a warning and it is negative. Look at verse 7. And they reasoned among themselves, saying, "It's because we have taken no bread." So they reasoned, or the word means they've deliberated, you know, they're discussing among themselves about what Jesus meant. And so we don't really know what all options that they may have come up with, but it seems like they sort of settled on that it's got to be some sort of warning to them because they didn't bring bread with them. And I think maybe it's in Mark's account, he says something like they only had one little loaf with them or something like that, and they didn't bring any more. And of course, they probably didn't really know where they were going or what all they were going to face when they got there. And so they hadn't prepared. And so they decided that this must be it. He warned us about leaven, and we didn't bring any extra bread. We don't have provisions. So this has got to be maybe that Jesus is warning us about being unprepared or something in some way. Verse number 8, "Which when Jesus perceived, he said unto them, O ye of little faith, why reason ye among yourselves because you've brought no bread?" So Jesus knew their reasoning, and he responded to them, and he said that they were of little faith, and he does use that diminutive prefix there, little faith, small faith. And obviously this would be quite a contrast between the great faith of the Canaanite woman in chapter 15 and verse 28. Now the point of saying, "O ye of little faith," is not that he's saying they are unsaved, even though Judas was in the midst of them, but see, they were worried about bread. They were worried about being hungry. And they realized that they hadn't prepared for this trip. And then when you think about the great faith of the Canaanite woman in the previous chapter, well, she confessed to Jesus, she didn't need the children's bread. You don't have to take the children's bread and give that to me. All she needed was just the crumbs that fell from the table. And that would have been sufficient. It would have been enough. So you think about those two sort of in contrast, the great faith and the little faith. And it certainly makes sense. Verse number 9, "Do ye not yet understand? Neither remember the 5 loaves of the 5,000 and how many baskets ye took up? Neither the 7 loaves of the 4,000 and how many baskets ye took up?" So Jesus here refers to these two multitude feedings that happened, the feeding of the 5,000 and the feeding of the 4,000. And the point that he makes in referring to them, it's the same in both instances. He specifically mentions how many baskets of leftovers that they took up in each case. So in the feeding of the 5,000, they took up 12 baskets full. In the feeding of the 4,000, they took up 7 baskets full. Remember, this is after feeding thousands of people with just a little amount of bread and a little amount of fish, feeding thousands of people, and everyone there ate until they were fully satisfied. And there remained beyond that 7 baskets full in the case of the 4,000 and 12 in the case of the 5,000. And so this is what he remembers. He says, do you not, he said, why are you reasoning this, that you have not brought bread? Do you not remember these two feedings? And obviously they did. So they shouldn't be worried. In other words, Jesus is saying that shouldn't be your concern. You shouldn't be worried about being hungry or not having enough to eat. If there's something that they truly need, I mean, they're with the Son of God. They are with the true bread that came down from heaven, as he said in John's account in John 6. So there's no reason, you shouldn't be worried about having enough bread to eat. Then look at verse 11. How is it that you do not understand that I spake it not to you concerning bread, that you should beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and of the Sadducees? So Jesus confirmed that he was not warning them about bread. What he said didn't have to do with having loaves of bread with them in the boat for this trip. And he mentions again the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees specifically. So then we see verse number 12. Then understood they how that he bade them not beware of the leaven of bread, but of the doctrine of the Pharisees and of the Sadducees. The word that's used here for understood is they put it together. So it you know, we might sometimes say, you know, well, it clicked. You know, it made sense. The light bulb went off, however you want to put it. They put it together then. They understood all. Jesus is not talking to us about bread. That's not why he's talking about leaven. He's warning us about the teaching of both groups, the Pharisees and the Sadducees, warning them to be careful. Well, it's interesting when we think about it, because the Sadducees and the Pharisees were almost polar opposites in a lot of ways, concerning the things that they believed and practiced and taught. But they were certainly agreed on the fact that Jesus was not the promised Messiah. And they had various ways of trying to disprove his Messiahship. So really, what they had in common was their unbelief. And Jesus warned his apostles against it. And remember, Judas was one of the 12 and was with them. He was obviously infected with the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees, as was also the multitude of Israel. As you go on reading in the gospel account, Jesus had all these great crowds surrounding him, but eventually the Pharisees and the Sadducees won the day. They swayed that crowd against Jesus of Nazareth to the point that they cried out to Pilate, "Give us Barabbas and away with Jesus and crucify him." So he gives them this warning, particularly about the unbelief. One of the things that Jesus said about the Pharisees when he told the disciples to leave them alone was that they're blind guides. And they're leading blind followers, and they're both going to fall into a hole. And so Jesus is here saying, be very careful of their teaching and of their ways. Be very careful that you are not persuaded, that you are not taken in by their belief. So the Pharisees and the Sadducees had rejected the identity of Jesus of Nazareth as the Son of David and Son of God. They didn't come to Jesus seeking a sign so that they could believe. They didn't come to Jesus essentially saying, you know, we're kind of on the fence. We could go either way. We think it could be possible. So if you show us a real proof, then we will believe. That wasn't their motivation at all. Remember again, Jesus said very plainly they were hypocrites coming to him. They were not seeking proof in order to believe that Jesus was the Messiah. They were seeking confirmation and something that they could use against Jesus with the people of Israel and the governors of Rome. So their unbelief was the stubborn unbelief of hard hearts and blind eyes and deaf ears, just like had been prophesied of that generation. Every sign that Jesus could have or would have or had already performed would have been met with an explanation. I mean, we go back to Matthew 12 and remember how the Pharisees had told the crowd. The crowd said, is this the son of David? Seems like it is. And they'd said, no, he casts out devils by the prince of devils. By the power of Satan does he cast out devils. In other words, they had an explanation. They had an answer for any sign that Jesus performed. But Jesus said they couldn't discern the signs of the times. They didn't understand that they were living in the day of the fulfillment of that prophecy. Well, if you're hearing this message, you're not a Christian, maybe you have had the feeling or the thought that God needs to give you some kind of a sign. And maybe you think that he needs to give you some sort of indisputable proof. You know, maybe this happens, something happens in the sky, whatever that it is. And if God gives this proof, then I'll believe. Well, just like Jesus spoke with the Pharisees and the Sadducees here, that's a question or a thought or a request that comes out of unbelief and not out of faith. The truth is, God has already given a great number of signs, and they've all been written down in this word for us to read and to see, to read the account of the witnesses that saw and heard and experienced these things. And if you refuse Jesus Christ because you think you want or need something else in order to believe, then you're really just like the Pharisees and the Sadducees in this story. And Jesus told them very plainly, you're not going to receive any sign. And in fact, the sign of Jonah, the sign of resurrection, which is actually the sign of their judgment because they are the ones that put him to death in the first place. God has given us a self-authenticating sign in the gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ and salvation. The gospel also tells the truth about us, that we are naturally unbelieving sinners. And much like the Sadducees and the Pharisees, we can be very good at manufacturing explanations to explain all of these things away so that no constraint is put on us. Well, here's the good news. The Bible tells us that Jesus Christ died for sinners. We're in about the middle of Matthew's gospel, and we're continuing to read his path to that cross. Jesus Christ died for sinners. And he died for sinners fully aware of their sins because he took all those sins on himself. And of course, the good news is that through his death and resurrection, there is forgiveness of sins. There is peace with God. There's an eternal life of joy for all that repent and believe in him. And one of the things that Paul wrote about was that the gospel is the power of God unto salvation. The Greeks seek wisdom. They want philosophy. They want abstract. The Jews, he said, require a sign, just like these Pharisees and Sadducees. You just show us something from heaven if we're going to believe this. But to those who do believe, Jesus Christ is the wisdom and the power of God. Not some miraculous natural wonder. Not some abstract philosophy. So the Pharisees and the Sadducees, again, came to Jesus not out of belief, not out of even seeking. But they came to him out of unbelief. They were testing him and trying to disprove him.